Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Station.
They love it on Nebula. They're wild about it on Taurinus. Even on Motus, where they don't like anything at all, they eat it up.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
I've got things I like to do. I like to watch television.
Jeff Lutz.
Well, you're just talking about all these shows, like old man,
right.
What is that? Like every show that starts, well, I'm watching it. I don't get it.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Stand by for action.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome. It's a Tuesday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show, KFH Radio. Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz, as always, co-hosting. Max Power, as always, producing and engineering. 869-1240, as always, your IHOP hotline.
Brought to you by IHOP.
Yeah, IHOP. Of course, that's why it's the IHOP.
Oh, hotline. Yeah, absolutely.
Got some college basketball game. Very intrigued by the Drake-Kansas State game. Not so much the Kansas City, Wichita. Is it Kansas City or UMKC?
It's Kansas City. I don't know what the deal is with them changing their name.
Well, they have UMKC all over the place, but I think the official name now is the University of Kansas City.
I figured it was the opposite. Like
Kansas City University?
Like the official name was still Missouri Kansas City, but for branding purposes, they go with Kansas City for merchandising.
Well, I don't know, maybe.
Stuff like that.
I just know they've never been very good at basketball.
I can't really remember a time when they were.
So the Shockers should have a relatively easy time of it this evening at Coke Arena.
You would think so.
I almost guarantee it.
Yeah, UMKC.
What's the line in that ball game?
I don't know.
I'll look it up. Don't worry about it.
15.5.
Don't worry about it. 14.5.
Dang, I almost said
that. The line in the Drake K-State game is K-State favored by 1.5. I might take Drake.
It's tough.
Speaking of college basketball, I was perusing what games are on tonight, and there's already been two games played today.
Interesting.
Arkansas Pine Bluff beat a school called Ecclesia, 120-61.
Yeah.
Ecclesia, according to this Yahoo scores list, is 0-3. Now, the other game, Delaware handled Missouri Cotia.
Okay.
92-75, Delaware with the win. Missouri Cotia, 0-2.
Right. Here's what that
Tell
actually
me about
is.
That.
Here's what that actually is. And Jamin and I, my friend Jamin, formerly the co-host of Just Saying with Jeff and Jamin, have gone down these rabbit holes several times. And Ecclesia came up and won because Tennessee Martin played a school called Champion Christian, who beat Ecclesia 100-67. I don't know where they're getting the records, but Ecclesia has played 15 games, and their closest game is that they lost by 27 points.
I guess they use the record against Division I teams.
Yes, and we also, Jamin also went down that Delaware, Misericordia or whatever it's called. They beat Swarthmore, who beat Widener, who beat DeSales, who beat Moravian.
What level of
I don't know.
Are these NAIA schools?
I don't think so. Who beat Goucher, who beat Scranton, who beat Medgar Evers.
I don't care about all that.
Who beat Pratt Institute, and Pratt Institute is 0-11. So we couldn't go any farther down.
Why are they playing these games this early? Against, I don't know, it's just bizarre.
But we found these obscure schools that have basketball teams. These Bible colleges.
Of course there are.
No, but like just, there's a million of them. But there can't be that many college basketball players.
Why?
who are capable of playing basketball.
You just get 10 guys or girls and you're ready to go.
A lot of these, and I've done the homework on some of the rosters, they didn't even play high school basketball.
Right. I could have played some level of college basketball.
I'm sure anybody could have.
No, just me.
No. Not just you, trust me.
Back in my day, I probably could have played at some level.
Anybody could.
I don't know what level, but there would have been a place for me. With the way I shot the ball, somebody would have said, hey, we need that guy. I know he didn't make his team his senior year of high school, but we could use him.
Did you know there's a Leech Lake Tribal College?
Of course. By the way, the only reason I didn't make the team my senior year is because I really didn't want to.
Yeah, no, who would?
No, really.
Who would want to
make
the team?
We had a new coach, Del Heidebrecht, who I
love. That sounds like a defense mechanism to me.
Who I love, by the way. I got to know him much better during my time at the Eagle when he was still coaching at Derby.
Loved him so much, he didn't inspire any effort from you.
Del calls me a lot, still, to this day. And, yeah, I didn't really want to make the team because I knew
you wanted
it was not going
to
be a good team.
You wanted to make it. You were just afraid that if you tried and failed, you wouldn't have an excuse. So when you don't try and fail, then, oh, I didn't even try, so who cares?
Nah, I didn't even try.
No, I get all that. That's an easy psychological puzzle to solve.
Well, I don't think it's a psychological thing at all.
Of course it is.
It's just a guy
fear of rejection? That's like the number one thing in the world.
Well, I made the team as a sophomore and a junior.
Not the varsity.
I made the varsity as a junior.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
I got hurt. I told you I banged my ankle.
And you were out for the year?
I was out for 8 weeks, so I was whooping out for the year.
Remember when I banged my ankle against a wall?
Now, this was close to a broken ankle.
Head first into it?
Yeah, that was nothing.
You know how many games I missed?
That was nothing. I watched
zero.
That. I dang near broke my ankle.
Play ball.
I don't know why you get why you think you can make fun of me.
Get out there, ice it up, tape it up, and play.
Well, I tried. I just couldn't.
Sad. All you did was stand on the 3-point line anyway.
No, I mixed it up. I had a heck of a sophomore year. I was off to a really good start in my junior year. And that ankle injury, no, it's the truth. Ask somebody.
A tale as old as time.
Ask somebody.
Oh, the coach didn't like me and it got hurt.
No, the coach liked me. Ask somebody.
I'm just saying these are the common excuses.
That coach got fired that year mainly because I couldn't play.
That's probably it. Where's our training staff?
By the way, another coach I really like.
Well, why don't you tell us how he got fired then?
Well, I don't
That's
want to.
That's how much you like him.
I do like him. He went on later to coach the Derby girls and did a heck of a job. And he was also our junior high coach. And
so he didn't really get fired.
Let me say this. No, he was the junior high coach before he became the high school coach. And let me say this. Formerly a sometimes caller to the morning show I used to do.
Interesting.
He's the guy. Who, when I said, honestly, that I went 17 for 17 in a practice, he's the guy that called and verified it.
He's called into this show.
Do you remember that?
I remember someone.
Mr. Paul Evans.
Being planted.
No.
To
he's
say
the,
that.
He was the, he's the guy.
I'm sure you think he is.
And he said, that doesn't shock me at all, I believe was what he
said. And I'm sure the real Paul Evans is out there, but whoever called our show was clearly some kind of decoy.
I don't know why you feel like you got to minimize me. I don't understand it. I actually did that.
I'm sure you did.
Are you?
Sure, it's practice. Anybody can go out there and shoot layups.
It wasn't layups. I'm sure there were a few layups in there, but it was when I got hot, I was something else. I don't know why you refused to believe that.
Well, if I saw a guy, what year was this?
My sophomore year.
No,
My ninth grade year.
Oh, well, that's different. If it had been your sophomore year and you went 17 for 17, that guy better be getting you into some varsity games, because if you get hot and that's what happens, then you might give the team a chance to win. A lot still is missing from that story.
I had a checkered experience with basketball, no question about it. What do they call it when you just go play games in a gym with other people? Yeah, in the pickup world, what do they talk about the guys up in the playgrounds in New York City?
That they were good at basketball.
They call him he was a playground legend. Remember, you've heard that term.
Sure,
that's kind of how I was referred to at Derby.
Kinda, yeah, kinda. If by kinda you mean not.
You're so threatened by me.
Why am I threatened? I mean, I could just
Most
make...
Most sons would be saying, tell me more, Dad. That sounds really fascinating.
I could just make stuff up about myself, too.
You
and then
sound like you were
when you
pretty good. I'd like to hear more.
And then when you refuted it, I could say you're threatened, but I don't think that does anybody any good.
A lot of sons would be enamored by this kind of stuff.
No, they wouldn't. Nobody would.
If Brian Griffiths were to say this stuff to his kid, they'd be his boys.
Trust
they'd
me.
Be sitting around. And
Brian Griffiths played at one of these pathetic, low-level colleges in basketball, and tough break for him. He
what
might
do
as
you
well
mean,
have
tough break.
He might as well have not played or never been seen in public.
What if the kids hear you say that?
Oh, they'll get it.
Or what if he hears?
I hope he does.
Oh, he'd handle you in a heartbeat.
Brian, we've always made fun of you if you're playing at that school. And your hair at the time.
Was his hair long?
It's kind of long.
I'm sorry to hear that. Again, 869-1240 is the phone number. We have, here's a text from our friend Brian.
Uh-oh.
And he's not going to be happy.
He sure isn't. What does he say? He's quick, man.
What do you mean pathetic?
I knew that would get him.
And he said he had long hair and a beard.
And I think he wore a chain, too, so he's kind of cool.
Yeah. At 2:25 today, we have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Jesse is very giving of his time, never says no.
Well, that's nice.
And if he does say no, he'll just say, well, I can do it another time. So, we look forward to talking to Jesse. We got a lot to talk to him about. We are closing in on the end of the regular season. The Chiefs have three difficult games ahead of them, and their closest pursuer, the Buffalo Bills, have three very winnable games ahead of them.
Can you do me a huge favor, and when we have Jesse on, not ask specifically about Patrick Mahomes, because I got a good question.
No, I'm going to ask
well-worded,
my first question.
A well-worded question about Patrick Mahomes.
Well, that's going to be my first question.
Then let me ask the first question.
I got a well-worded question.
Let's hear it. Let's compare.
When your name comes up first on the marquee here, then you can have the first question.
Let's let Max judge who has the best question. You go first.
I don't have a question.
I have a question.
I got to think about it.
I have a question.
Let's hear yours.
I just thought of it, so I got to put it in the right words.
And you won't, because you always fumble these.
Do the Chiefs have more to gain by playing Patrick Mahomes in both of these games coming up within a span of 4 days, or more to lose by playing him in the potential?
Well, of course, that's the only question to ask.
That's a well-worded question.
No, that's the only question to ask.
But I worded it well.
That's exactly
I don't think
the
you would
question
have worded
I
it.
Want to ask.
You'd be like, hey, Jesse, where are you at on the Pretenders? And then that's a Bruceism, but we'll go with it. And that's all I have.
You are struggling today.
No, I'm not.
At 2:45, Kevin Saul, the athletic director at Wichita State University, will join us as we get our monthly appearance from Kevin. And then in hour number two, we will have a game. I presume Max will participate.
Max will.
Okay. And then tomorrow we've got kind of a mixed-up show. I'll be here for hour number one for the three-man booth. I'll be leaving before hour number two, and it'll be just you and Duda.
I wonder what we'll do for that hour. That's tough.
Well, the show will drop off precipitously.
Well, I mean, it only can, right? Not because you're leaving necessarily, but because just the rhythm will be thrown off. We'll have to go from three to two.
It'll be awful.
He might.
And I don't know what you guys are going to do to try to save it.
And we have to do it from here, which is kind of different.
What do you mean kind of different?
Well, it's best when Jason and I together are in the studio.
Why is that?
Because it's more of a radio friendly.
What's not radio friendly about this?
We're kind of just riffing here. We're father and son riffing. If it's me and Duda, it's different.
Well, I love doing the show here with
Duda.
Yeah,
but it's different.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's different.
You're just insecure about it.
No, I'm not.
And you always will be as long
as
you
live. Insecurity. That's looking out for myself. That's wanting to put on and put out the best product possible.
You know what I know every single day when I start this show?
That
I'm
going to
put out the best show possible.
Thank God Jeff's here.
And if you contribute, great. If you don't, okay. I'll get it figured out.
At least I don't have to carry this with Duda. Jeff's here. It's at worst a 50-50 split. And away we go.
What?
What?
I don't know what you meant by any of that.
Well, I think it was pretty
honestly
clear.
I have no clue.
That says more about you than me, unfortunately.
Still waiting for a baseball move to happen. Gotta feel like something's gonna shake here in the near future.
Yeah, usually they amp it up the last few days before Christmas because then they know they'll take a break. So hopefully something happens.
I don't feel like the Cardinals are close to being finished. I don't know that they've started.
Did they start?
I think the Royals still have a move or two in them, judging from their last season. Seems like they'd want to add another bat, maybe another pitcher to the situation.
Well, they've got the guys like Santander and Hernandez out there that may or may not be in their price range.
Doesn't sound like they're on the radar for those guys. Probably should be.
About $20 million a year players. 3 years.
Yeah, something like that.
A lot of money flying around.
I could see a Jack Flaherty joining the Royals. Something like that. He's not going to come cheap.
ESPN says 5 years, 115 for him.
That's a roll. With any pitcher, it's a roll of the dice.
An investment.
You never know. If you give him 5 years, 115, you can almost count on him missing 1 year.
You think?
Yeah, that's just what happens with pitchers.
A whole year, though? It doesn't
sure.
happen as much.
I'm talking about a year of starts. So
okay,
let's
that's
say
fair.
He'd get 150 starts over 5 years. He's probably going to miss 30. So you're probably going to be lucky to get 120 starts over a five-year period. From a starting pitcher.
That's closer to fair.
Yeah, everything I say is fair.
Everything.
You just don't understand it. It's on a higher level.
Miss a year. I was taking that literally, as everyone probably would.
Well, he may miss a year.
He might.
And to say that you're going to miss 30 starts out of 150, that's probably, if you went and studied all the starting pitchers, that's probably pretty generous.
All right, name a pitcher.
Okay, Chris Sale.
Well, yeah, he missed like multiple years.
Lance Lynn.
All right.
He's a horse, but he misses games. He missed 8 to 10 starts this year for the Cardinals just in 1 year.
I'll take his last 5 years because he's been mostly healthy as far as I know. He's gone. Since COVID, in 2020, he made 13 starts, which led the league. And then he went 28, 21, 32, 21, 23.
See?
But he also had a stretch where he went 33, 33, 31, 33, 31. That was early in his career.
Well, that's what I said. He's a horse.
He is.
Lance Lynn is a rarity. That's why he's made so much money. He's a good pitcher. But he's always been a reliable pitcher in that he'll make 30 starts.
Yeah, he's a durable guy, and he's made $95 million in his career. Probably going to get...
If it was just me talking about baseball, this audience would be so happy. Because I just put it so well.
I don't know. I thought that was, again, a back and forth equally.
Let's get a break in. We have Jesse Newell next. We'll talk Chiefs. They have a big stretch of games here in a short amount of time. They'll play their remaining three games in a 10-day stretch, starting with a home game this weekend against the Houston Texans. Back in a minute with Jesse Newell.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
Jesse Newell joins us on the hotline. I mistakenly said the Chiefs are on the verge of playing three games in 10 days. They're in the midst of playing three games in 10 days. They have Houston coming up Saturday. Jesse, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So I'm going to save a question for Jeff because he thinks he's going to word this question in an exquisite way. So we'll judge that after he asks the question. So I'll just start off asking you, how important is it in your estimation, after seeing what the Chiefs did last year, going on the road and sweeping and getting to the Super Bowl and winning, how important is it, is home field to this team?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think more than that is the bye, to be honest with you guys. You know, I remember doing the math and the studies. I talked to Aaron Schatz of FTN Fantasy, who does all the DVOA numbers, and he talked about how, you know, the Chiefs went through the toughest path in playoff history and to win the Super Bowl last year if they were going to make it, and they ended up doing it. I just don't think you can rely on that again. And then, you know, seeing how these other teams have played in the AFC, plus we sort of know at least some of the vulnerabilities of the Chiefs based off of what we've seen from their line and, you know, from just the offense in general. I think they need the bye this year. I think if they want to give themselves the best, the truest chance of doing this three-peat, I don't think that they can rely on hoping for a miracle run at the end and hoping that everything falls their way like it did a season ago. So the other part of this, and then kind of I mentioned this with the bye, is like right now in position to get the 7th seed would be probably either the Chargers or the Broncos, most likely the Broncos. And we know how the Chiefs have performed at home against those teams. I mean, he either took a blocked field goal or a doinked field goal for them to beat both of those teams at home. And so you just take that out of the equation. If it's a 60-40 game or 65-35 game or 70-30 game, whatever that is, if you have the bye, you don't have to play it. And a team like the Bills does have to play it. So I do think it's important for this year's team, plus just another week of rest. We saw what a guy like Travis Kelce could do on an extra week of rest last year. If this team gets that, I think it'd be a big advantage.
Yeah, Jesse, listen to how good this question is.
He tried it on me, and it's really, really well-worded. Here we go.
So did the Chiefs have more to gain with that potential top seed in the bye by sending Patrick Mahomes out there for these next two and three games, especially on short rest for the second one, or more to lose by sending him out there and potentially he gets a little more banged up, maybe that ankle sprain gets worse? How do you gauge that?
Well, first, Jesse, you're a longtime journalist, as I am, and as is Jeff. That might have been the wordiest question I've ever heard, but go ahead and answer it.
Thank you. Well, I could tell it was premeditated and a lot of work went into it, so that was good.
Yes, thank you.
I appreciate the effort. No, I mean, you're going to tell how well it was worded is that basically Mahomes just got asked that same question here about an hour ago.
Thank you.
Here at the Chiefs facility, and his answer I thought was pretty telling. Like, listen, Patrick's a really smart guy. He understands what's going on. He understands the math of this. And he got asked about that. Hey, it's short rest. The playoffs are coming. How do you view this whole thing kind of through that lens? And he said, look, if the Chiefs win two of their next three games, or if they win their next two games, they got a lot of time off where he can heal it. You know what I mean? Where he can heal up his ankle. You know, he can get it better and they can get the one seed with it. So, yeah, I think right now, this is kind of a grit your teeth and play moment for Mahomes. Now, can he re-injure it worse? I mean, I don't know. He's played on it before, and you know, he's had those instances, you know, where he got pushed out of bounds and hobbled off the field, but then came back on. You know, this has happened in the past for him. So I don't know if the risk of re-injury for the ankle is high. Where the risk of injury might be high is that right now he's running for his life out there with the offensive line. And, you know, he's running for his life when he's been mobile. Now we know he's going to be less mobile. So there is risk there to be like, hey, this guy has needed every bit of how he can maneuver around the pocket to stay upright in these past couple games, and now he doesn't have that at his disposal. So I think he understands the situation here, and I think the Chiefs understand it, where I think it goes back to the earlier point. They need the one seed. They need the bye. They've worked to this point. They've gotten all these nice wins, fluky wins, whatever you want to call them, wins that have banked them to 13-1. You know, it would be a real shame to give that away and give that one seed away here late in the season just because, you know, you weren't able to grind through. And we know we're talking about somebody completely different as a human with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I think any other person on the planet probably we're talking about, we're saying, yeah, you're probably going to send him out. You're probably going to be cautious. But this guy doesn't know that. And for whatever, however he does it, he doesn't experience pain like the rest of us. And so, you know, you're kind of expecting Superman, superhuman things, but that's the thing we've seen from Patrick Mahomes, at least throughout his history in Kansas City.
Chiefs are 13-1. They have the Houston Texans coming to town on Saturday. At this news conference you mentioned, it seems like Andy Reid was asked about his confidence in Carson Wentz. And, of course, what's he going to say? He has, quote, full confidence in Carson Wentz if he is subjected to being out there. How much of that is true? Does he have full confidence? Do the Chiefs have full confidence? Do you have full confidence that Carson Wentz can get them through a rough time if needed?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can tackle it from a couple of different angles. I think Carson Wentz is probably the best backup the Chiefs have had with Patrick Mahomes. So I'll start with that. He could start for the Raiders right now, and he'd be the best option by far. He could probably start for about 5 to 10 teams out there and be really good for them. And, heck, he might not be a backup next year. He might go sign somewhere to go be potentially in the starting mix. And I know Andy Reid kind of didn't even really mask him saying that, is that, you know, he's kind of surprised that this guy's here with them because he feels like there's other teams that could use him. So I think there is confidence in him, and I do think that they, you know, sign him for a moment like this, but he's better than Henny. He's better than Blaine Gabbert. I mean, he's better than the guys they previously had. So I think all that's true. But, I mean, like, it's sort of like if we want to talk about Joe Tooney playing left tackle. Like, Andy Reid keeps complimenting Joe Tooney on his availability to do that and his attempt to try to do it and, you know, learning it in 1 week or relearning it and his, you know, willingness to do that for the team. Like, all that is fine and good, and that's correct, but it doesn't mean Joe Tooney played good left tackle for the Chiefs last game against Myles Garrett. You know, he tried the best he could, but he's not an NFL left tackle. And so I would say the same thing about Carson Wentz. Like, we can say that he's good and the best backup that they've had and probably the 25th best quarterback on the planet, but he's not Patrick Mahomes. And that's why you see the Vegas line move 6.5, 7 points in the Texans' direction, because they're figuring that either, you know, Mahomes probably isn't going to play, or if he's not going to play, that he's going to be limited with his mobility. And beyond that offensive line, it's going to be a problem, especially against the Houston Texans pass rush, which is, you know, stop me if you've heard this one before, one of the Chiefs' opponents having one of the best pass rushes in the NFL. So I think all those things can be true at the same time. I thought he played well when he came in the fourth quarter. Carson Wentz did. I think that, again, I would take him over Henny. I would take him over Gabbert. I'd take him over a lot of the guys that have backed up Patrick Mahomes before. But I don't know if that, quote, complete confidence, you know, makes up for the touchdown in plays that Patrick Mahomes gives you, you know, above and beyond what an average or slightly below average NFL quarterback would be. So the big thing, I think, this week, and Mahomes even said it himself, is he said he doesn't want to hurt the team by being out there. Like, if his mobility is so bad that he can't execute handoffs and he can't execute rollouts, those sorts of things, then he'll have to turn the keys over and give it to Carson Wentz and give the team the best chance to win. But, again, just knowing this guy and knowing the history and knowing how he reacts to pain compared to the rest of us mere mortals, I think he's going to play. I think Patrick Mahomes is going to be out there. He's going to play. And he might not look exactly like himself, but he'll probably still be pretty good.
I obviously agree that getting that bye in the number one seed is really important. But looking ahead to a potential game with Buffalo, does it matter necessarily where that game is played? I just feel like Buffalo, they've allowed a lot of points the last two games. I get that. But the Chiefs don't really seem capable of scoring that many points or getting into a game like that. And I think Buffalo, their offense is better than the Chiefs' defense, and their path potentially with the Chargers and Pittsburgh, maybe. I don't know. Just is that a good matchup for the Chiefs? Jesse understands what I'm saying.
So I think this is why, again, we're all circling back to why the one seed is important. Maybe most important, when I just talked about, hey, the Chiefs, if they're the two seed, they don't want to play the Broncos in round one at Arrowhead. You know what I mean? You're probably, 30% to lose that game because they almost lost it before. Maybe should have lost it before. I mean, I know they executed the play on the field goal block, but I mean, that's not something you can bank on every single time. But if the Chiefs get the one seed, then the Bills have to do that. You know what I mean? And upsets happen. Things happen in the NFL playoffs. And so I think for the Chiefs right now, as it's trending, I would guess they would be about a 1-point home underdog against the Bills right now. If they played them in the AFC Championship game, whereas, you flip that game over to Buffalo, you're now talking, 4.5 points, something like that. So that's a big deal to start with. You're up in your chance of winning that game, at least from what Vegas would say, from, 25-30% to 35-40-45%, which is a big deal based on how those teams are injury-wise going into that game. But even more importantly than that, it's sort of like, the March Madness. I mean, sometimes teams go on runs when they hit a 16 seed and then a 9 seed and then an 11 seed and then a 12 seed. And all of a sudden you're in the Final Four, and the teams that played 1-8-4, played 16-8-4-2 and have beaten themselves up to get there, or they don't even make it at all because they had a tough road. So I think for the Chiefs, that's why this is important. Give the Bills the onslaught. Give them the extra game. Give them the tough path. Give them the thought that they have to come back to Arrowhead Stadium where they never seem to win in the playoffs. And so I do think it's important this time around. And for the Chiefs, it's just sort of a math game right now. It's a math game of percentages. And right now, if we're just being completely honest with ourselves, we see what they look like on offense. It was a great week for the defense, but over the course of the last 5 weeks, they've been down as well. This team right now is just not statistically quite what the Bills are. And so you're going to have to give yourself every advantage possible in that sort of matchup. And if the Chiefs get the one seed, obviously that's something that would be majorly in their favor. Added to the sort of karma and juju that they have against the Bills in the postseason, that could take you a long way if those two teams need to meet up in the AFC Championship game.
Jesse Newell, our guest. One final question for Jesse. As the Chiefs prepare for Houston coming up Saturday at Arrowhead Stadium, let's assess the acquisitions, in-season acquisitions of Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins. Neither have eye-popping numbers, but both have really good numbers, and both have been extremely valuable. When the story of the 2024 Chiefs is written, how prominent are those two players?
Really prominent. I would, especially with Hopkins, because in a moment where the Chiefs had lost so many receivers and so many weapons, I mean, I consider him wide receiver one. I know Xavier Worthy's come on lately, and they're using him on more short routes, getting him in the football, utilizing him in space, which has been great for his development. But part of that development also is a veteran like DeAndre Hopkins being in the building with him and also taking some pressure off of him in a moment in, week 10, week 11, week 12, when they need somebody to come in here and take a greater target share as Xavier Worthy was kind of finding his way. So you add that to Kareem Hunt, who, came off his couch literally. He told us, comes off his couch and comes in and just takes a beating for the Chiefs and was gaining the yards that were blocked, helped them through a stretch. And it seems like a long time ago now, but there was a big stretch of the season where they were just relying on their run game, and that was the way they were grinding out games alongside, clutch third down plays and defensive plays in the clutch when they needed them too. So, yes, two very good acquisitions. The other thing I think we need to look at real quickly, too, is what other guys that were traded to other teams have done. And guys like Deontay Johnson have not worked out. Guys like Amari Cooper, have barely gotten snaps. A guy like Davante Adams, cost a fortune, did not turn the Jets' fortunes. So when looking at this as a whole, what did the Chiefs give up and what did they get out of it? I think you put their receivers that they got in DeAndre Hopkins among the best at the cost among the lowest. So that is a big win for the Chiefs front office. And when we do talk about this season at the end, I think that's one of the major things we'll look at and say the Chiefs got this one right.
Thank you, Jesse. We always appreciate your time and willingness to come on. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Thanks.
Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star breaking down the Chiefs. Here's Kevin Saul, the athletic director at Wichita State. Kevin just texted me something that looks interesting, but by gosh, I don't have time to really go into it. Kevin, maybe you want to text that to me an hour before the show.
Yeah, no doubt. Happy holidays, guys. Hope you're well.
You too, Bob.
You'll be maybe intrigued to understand my dad had a huge record collection. He actually had Brenda Lee for the turntable. We used to spin Brenda Lee as we were putting up our Christmas tree.
Well, there's no better song to listen to as you put up your Christmas tree. So the Shockers are in action tonight, coming off a 19-point loss at DePaul. Really a tale of two halves up in Chicago on Saturday. What can be gleaned from this game tonight as you approach the K-State game on Saturday at Koch Arena?
Well, I think what's interesting about life and basketball is when you have deficiencies or weaknesses in certain areas, life has a way of testing you down the road, and so does basketball. So we've got a Kansas City team that comes in. Certainly doesn't make it with the efficiency that DePaul and K-State does, but they shoot a lot of three-pointers. And so perimeter defense was clearly a concern at DePaul in terms of the urgency of perimeter defense. I thought they did a nice job on Skegman, which is number 42, the big player that shoots a ton of threes and scores a lot, really shut him down, just like we shut Garcia down with Minnesota that was averaging 26 points a game, and he had four. But at the end of the day, you said it, Bob, it was a tale of two halves. DePaul had made 11 three-pointers going into halftime, and we were still up 5 points. And so the second half obviously got away from us, so they made another six. What I think was an indication of the unfortunate result at DePaul is we had 16 turnovers. And if you look at the NCAA stats through – yesterday's game, we're ranking, I think, 50th in the country in turnovers in a good way. We just haven't turned the ball over like we did last year. And so that was obviously an outlier of a game. But DePaul currently sits as a quad one. What I texted you was our team sheet, so you can kind of see where the teams sit as of today in quads one through four and kind of determine strength of schedule. But DePaul's a quad one. We'll have two or three opportunities at additional quad ones throughout the year with North Texas, with Memphis, and then potentially with Florida Atlantic, depending on how well they do. So we'll have some opportunities at the quad one to make some hay there this year. So we're 2-0 in quad two, 4-0 in quad three, and we sit at 2-0 in quad four. Kansas City's a quad four game for us tonight. We look forward to that challenge.
So we know we got Kansas State coming up next on Saturday. We know that ticket sales have been pretty robust for that game. What does that tell you about the appetite not only for Shocker basketball but for high-profile opponents on the home court, and how do you kind of capture that so this game doesn't turn into a one-off, that you can capture that same level of audience for future games?
Well, prior performance predicts future behavior, right, Jeff? This will be the first time that we've hosted K-State on the Koch Arena floor in 24 years. So in all reality, it is a one-off. This was a four-year deal that was done prior to my arrival. K-State's home games were Bramlage and T-Mobile Center in Kansas City, and ours were Intrust Bank and Koch Arena. So we will certainly continue to do that. The reality of those game contracts is there are two signature lines, and your opponent has to agree to that. So we have been pretty aggressive, and I will share with you, like, we've reached out to the Creightons and the Kansases and the Kansas States and the Oklahomas and the Oklahoma States and the Arkansas. There is, and I think this is a compliment to Shocker Nation, there is massive apprehension for getting into Koch Arena because it is such a great environment, and everybody in the basketball world knows that. So we will continue to do those things. We're going to focus on Kansas City tonight, and we'll turn our attention after tonight to Kansas State. Ticket sales are going well for Saturday. I think we are pushing just past 8,000. We've opened up some some lower price GA tickets in certain areas up top. And we've done some special deals for our students and their additional guests as well. And so we're trying to push to a sellout for Saturday evening.
Kevin Saul, our guest, Wichita State Athletic Director. I don't doubt what you just said about there being great apprehension about coming to play at Coke Arena, but the fan has to come first here. And we can debate this another time, but I feel very strongly that we need to give the fans what they want when it comes to college basketball, and that the games that are played on home courts should be appealing, for the most part, to the fans. Do you generally agree with that statement?
I do generally agree with that statement. And if there's about, literally, Bob, there's about six or eight objectives you're trying to accomplish with scheduling, and one of them is a entertaining schedule that brings value to the season ticket package. So that certainly aligns with what you're talking about. It's not the only objective, but it is an incredibly important objective. So we will continue to push to do those things. We did the home and home with DePaul, so we've got DePaul coming back next year. We are talking through potential opportunities with some other institutions that I think our folks would be really excited about. So we've got to balance all those variables, but certainly that is an important one.
All right, good to hear that. Kevin Saul with us. I wanted to ask you, Kevin, you've been doing this a while now. What do athletic directors talk about when they're together now in the year 2024, almost 2025, as opposed to maybe what you discussed 6, 7, 8 years ago? How have those conversations changed?
I love that question. I will tell you that I think the how do I want to say this? The collegiality, the relational components between ADs was very, very different 8 years ago as opposed to today. It has gotten a little less relational and become a little bit more transactional. At the same time, for those of us that have been in the industry for some time now, and I'm in my 26th year, as you work through your network and you get to know folks, there are still those folks that are around that will trust you, and you can have conversations about, hey, how are you managing this? And there's certainly mentor relationships out there that lend to that. But I would tell you it's a little bit different, and college athletics obviously has changed tremendously in the last 4 or 5 years. And so that in and of itself has changed the content of the conversations, whereas we used to be talking about, you know, fundraising and scheduling and building programs and what were the important elements of those programs. We're all still talking about those things, but we're also talking about NIL, revenue share, house settlements, how are we positioning our programs in a spot to grow, to develop, to be successful, to be recruiting young people? How are we pushing for transparency within the system so that we can truly understand the market that we're competing with? How are we transitioning dollars from certain pathways to other pathways, but trying to maintain the student-athlete development component of developing our young people as students, persons, players, and eventually professionals? The educational component. So I would tell you the conversations, that a lot of the content is similar, but we've certainly added a lot over the last 5 years, given the changes in our industry.
Yeah. So does football kind of dictate the direction of college sports? Obviously, you know, we're not talking about a football school. That's kind of why I'm asking. What happens in football? Is there always that trickle down effect to now what's going on in basketball? I don't know if that's the right way to ask that question. I hope you kind of understand where I'm going. Yeah. But does it tower over even schools that don't have football, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, I think if you're dialed into the overall landscape, you have to understand what is going on with football, because it certainly impacts the finances. Like, I'll give you an example. The retroactive NIL payments that we've talked about on your show, where we're, as an industry, the house settlement administrator will be paying $2.8 billion over the next 10 years, provided house is approved, to student athletes from 2016 to today. The distribution of those funds is set out in the house settlement as 75% football, 15% men's basketball, 5% women's basketball, and 5% other sports. And so certainly football clearly dominates that component of the conversation. At the same time, there's recognition there that within the marketplace, that men's basketball is driving at a second in place to football in terms of those revenues. So it's incredibly important to the overarching conversation. I do think that we are in a unique place at Wichita State. Like I would share with you that we've had an opportunity to learn what institutions in our league are doing, and I think in an honest and transparent way, what they have done last year, this year, and what they project to do next year in terms of NIL and or revenue sharing in the three sports that are both basketballs and football. And I can tell you that we're positioned pretty well. And as our league peers are preparing for revenue share in FY26, what you're seeing is that rev share in non-football sports is actually going down, because our peers are interested in competing at an incredibly high level from a football perspective, and they're pouring a ton of resources into football, whereas we have the opportunity to pour the resources that we have available to us into men's, women's basketball, and baseball, and softball. And so by that very nature, those programs for us will benefit greater than their program peers within our league, because our league peers are going to be pouring so much into football. So I think that question, Jeff, it cuts both ways.
All right. That was you provide a lot of detail. I think I lost you about halfway through that, but it was over my head. But
well, I hope not. Maybe someday
I got one more question
on your show. We can go a little bit deeper.
I have one more question for you. I want you to, and I think we'll do this every time you're on, I just want you to talk about a particular coach in your program. Wichita State volleyball got to the postseason, the NCAA tournament. Won the American Athletic Conference tournament at Koch Arena. Chris Lamb's been here forever. Just talk a little bit about Lambeau.
Coach Lamb is a wonderful individual, and if you guys have spent time around him, he looks at challenges and issues and problems in a very unique way, from a very unique frame of mind. And it's great to have him in the head coach's room, because he thinks through things differently and he positions things differently and he challenges us to think in different ways. So I think he's, in that way, he contributes to our department a great deal. The volleyball season this year was a tale of two seasons. We went 15-13 in the regular season. We had six matches against ranked or receiving votes opponents. Did not win a set against those six, right? But we transitioned into postseason. We swept, did not lose a set in the American Athletic Conference tournament, made it to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 7 years since 2017. And I can tell you, he's got this developmental component within his program where they are tremendously better at the end of the year than they might be at the beginning of the year or over the summer. And I think you're seeing that, because last year, you guys might remember, they went through the NIVC tournament, volleyball's version of the NIT. They went through that undefeated and did not lose a set last year either, I think, in five matches. And so clearly he's got the postseason piece figured out, and we stand side by side with him to figure out how we can start a little faster, how we can compete with these ranked and receiving votes programs. He's recruiting really, really well right now. We're excited about where that goes, and obviously we want to compete for regular season championships in addition to postseason. But
always a pleasure.
I enjoy working with him.
Yeah, we like Lambeau, no question about it. We appreciate your time as well. Best of luck in the game tonight, and of course, a big house on Saturday against K-State. And Merry Christmas. Thanks, Kevin.
Merry Christmas to you guys. Appreciate the opportunity. Best to your families, and go Shockers.
Kevin Saul from Wichita State Athletics. Time for a break. One more hour to go. It will include a game coming up at about 3:25. Don't forget the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. IHOP, they're loaded French toast, something you need to look into at IHOP, breakfast partner of Xbox. Stay with us.
Hi. Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.